You've had a unique experience tonight. You've seen someone go into ecstasy when they were singing to God. This happens many times in India. The person is lost to body consciousness for a long time. So this is why I brought Barbara out of this. Tonight I'd like to talk to you a little bit about concentration to start with. Now, we have covered this subject before, and many of you have studied it in master's lessons. But it's a very, very important factor in all that we do. And I want you to remember two things. That concentration is the art upon that you use in focusing your mind upon any given thought. And the other one is that meditation is concentration used to focus upon God alone. Now we know that in everything that we do in everyday life, we must use the power of concentration. No matter what we do, if we're in the business world, if we're doing something at home, if we are playing music, if we're writing a book, if we're reading a book, regardless of what we're doing, we must use concentration. And to the degree that we can withdraw our minds from all other things which usually occupy the mind and focus it upon the one given thing, to that degree we will have success in concentrating, in memorizing, and in attaining the knowledge of that upon which we are concentrating, or we will do effectively that which we are doing if we concentrate upon it. In no other way will we do this. Now, concentration is absolutely and vitally necessary in meditation. You cannot truly meditate unless you have withdrawn the mind from all sensory objects and have placed it completely upon God. Many who start on the path, and many who have been on the path for years, still have a great deal of difficulty in doing this. Their minds are like the story of the monkey. There was a young businessman in India whose true God was the love of money. And he used fantastic ideas and ways of getting more and more money, of saving money in every direction. So finally, it came to pass that he was going to take a trip to London. And he even, although he was a wealthy businessman, considered hiring out as a steward on a boat so that he wouldn't have to pay so much fare. So one day, a friend of his, knowing what his nature was, came to him and he said, "My friend," he said, "I have the ideal solution for you." He said, "I know a holy man who can teach you to levitate and to walk on the water." And immediately the young Hindu businessman thought how wonderful this would be. I can go any place if I can levitate. I can float through the air. Or I can walk on water. I would save myself boat fare. He many times amused himself with strange fancies. And he wondered why God hadn't made him so that he could be as fast as electricity. Because in the flicker of an eye, tremendous currents flow forth and go long distances. They have great power. Anyway, thinking it over, he decided that he would go to this holy man. So he asked his friend to take him. So he went before the holy man. He told him what his desire was. So the holy man said, "What do you think you should do first?" He said, "Well, first I think I should learn to meditate. Will you teach me the art of meditation?" "Yes," he said, "I will." He said, you find a nice quiet room, and get a chair and a blanket, draw all the blinds, shut the door, and be exceedingly quiet, and concentrate on the word Om for 1 hour. Now, if you will do this every morning and every night for 1 hour, at the end of a month, you will be able to levitate and walk on water. So the man agreed to do this. But as he was leaving the room, the saint said, oh, yes, I forgot to tell you one thing. Do not concentrate on monkeys. Wow. The young man thought this was ridiculous. Of course he wasn't going to concentrate on monkeys. So he said that he would follow the master's instructions. So he went home, and he found himself a quiet room where he could be all alone. He did all the necessary things the saint had asked him to do, and he sat there, and he started to repeat the word Om. He repeated it several times, and all of a sudden the thought came to his mind, I must not concentrate on monkeys. And then he'd go back, and he'd repeat the word Om over and over again. Then he'd think, I must not concentrate on monkeys. And finally, at the end of a half hour, he found himself concentrating on monkeys in India, in Africa, in Sumatra, in every place where there were monkeys, in every zoo, and he could see nothing but monkeys, monkeys, monkeys everywhere. Well, he was just frantic. So the next day he went back to the master and he said, I am not going to study with you at all. Why did you suggest that I not think about monkeys? He said, all you have taught me is meditation on monkeys. And the holy man started to laugh, and he said, my son, I put that little sentence in there, that little thought in your mind, to show you how little you have learned to control your mind. If you had the power of concentration, if your mind was one focused and centered upon God, you would not have had any trouble with the monkeys. He said, the mind is like a monkey. It is hopping from here to here, to this tree and to that tree, all the trees of desires, what you have done, what you want, what you think of the other person thinks. Every way your mind goes. But are you its master or its slave? And the young man had to admit that he was the slave of the mind. He was not its master. Now, some of you are familiar with this story, in essence. But it is so of every single one of us. We have not learned to control our minds as we should in order to attain the necessary concentration to focus the full attention upon God. You cannot be a house divided against itself and get results. You cannot, at one and the same time, be giving a nod to God and thinking of what you have done today, what you're going to do tomorrow, about all of your problems, your troubles. Please, Lord, I want to meditate and concentrate on you, but I have all of these problems. Will you solve them for me? Please, Lord, will you do this? I pray you. We do it constantly, don't we? We have so many things that we want to ask God to do for us, to solve all of our problems, all of our troubles. But do we ever go to Him and say, Lord, Lord, just give me Thyself. Make me one with Thee, even as the Christ was, because Christ did say that all of the things that He did were possible to each and every one of us. Did we ever say that to God? Did we ever give Him our undivided attention, our undivided love, our undivided worship, and our undivided surrender? Did we ever do this? How can we possibly hope to attain universal consciousness if we are hating our fellow men? If we're concentrating on hate instead of on love. We have discussed it many times, and the masters all over the world, all of the great ones have discussed it, that there is only one way that you will attain God consciousness, and that is through love. Whether you be on one path of yoga or another, Still, you must have love for God and for God in all of His creatures, in all of His creation. This is a must, and I can assure you that not one individual will attain God realization until he cleanses and purifies his heart, his mind, and his soul, so that it can be filled with the love and the bliss of God. Now, when you concentrate with the object of, with the objective of meditating upon God, you have two environments. An environment is very important. If it is at all possible, you should have a room in which you meditate. And this room must be for this purpose alone. Now, it can also be your bedroom if you sleep there, but have it your room. Because just as a living room brings about the consciousness of conversation, a bathroom brings about the consciousness of cleansing, a kitchen brings about the consciousness of cooking, and a library of reading, just so, when you have a room for meditation, it brings out the consciousness of, here is where I meditate upon God and commune with Him. Here is where I take God into my heart, and I find Him in the silence of my own soul. So environment is very important. But there are many people who come and they say, but my home is so noisy. There are children, there's this distraction and that distraction. And this is true in many places. But this is no excuse for not meditating. Because no matter what your environment is, you can get up an hour earlier in the morning. You can go to bed an hour later at night. The body undergoes tremendous changes at those two times. Now, you throw off the poisons of your body in the morning, and you start to get your energy for the day, and this is the way your body becomes active, and you take over control, what there is of your mind that controls your body. And so this body operation goes on. But very late at night, the world is asleep. And so because you do not have all of the forces of the thinking of individuals to combat, you can do a much better job in concentrating and in meditating upon God. Much better. So if you are truly in earnest about wanting God realization, then in truth you have to make the effort and you have to go all the way. You cannot compromise with God. You cannot compromise with truth and expect to get results. Now, if you have universal realization, you must see God in everyone who comes before you, in every master, in every individual, in every creature, in every growing thing. Because if God is omnipresent, then He is equally present in every atom of space. The difficulty that most people have is that they cannot segregate God, the Absolute, and God who is manifest in duality. And this is where they have their difficulty. But God is present equally in both. Only one, He is in the silence beyond duality, but He contains all things within Himself. In the other case, He operates and goes away from Himself, and then He comes back to Himself. And there is this constant going out and coming in, which is why it says in the Bible that after you have fulfilled all the requirements that the Spirit demands of you, that you shall go out no more. So there is a constant going out and coming in, even of the individual soul. And there are many who have learned the art of doing this, of leaving the body, of traveling astrally. When they go into this first state of ecstasy, which is called Sabbakalpa Samadhi, the body remains completely still in a trance-like state, but you are conscious, but not of the body. You are conscious of the experience which you are having. And you need not fear, because God will always bring you back into the body. But these are not the things that we are after. This is phenomena, in a sense. And what you want is the full attention upon God. You want to go to God in balance. Now, there are four points to be remembered in this. One is that you must balance breath, life energy, mind, and the vital force. Because if you try to go to God using just one of these practices, it's going to take you an awful long time to get there. And you're not going to go to God in balance. So you must remember in all things to keep your awareness and your balance. You must do the breathing exercises which you have been taught, the Hong Sao technique. You must also retain the life force in your body as much as possible. Do not dissipate it through the wrong use of sex. Now, we are not talking about complete celibacy at this time. But in the end, if you want God realization, there must be complete purity, and therefore celibacy is the ultimate objective. You must learn control of the mind. You must learn control of the five senses. And this is a gradual process. And we work at these things, and we must work at them every day of our lives, every waking moment. And then practice in the little things of becoming master of yourself, until gradually you can use this same practice and power in the bigger things of your life, until you are the complete master of yourself, of all of your emotions, all of your speech, all of your thoughts, and all of your actions. The difficulty is that most of us are creatures of habit, and we have developed wrong habits of eating, of thinking, of sleeping, of talking, of acting. And we like these habits. They are the same habits that Krishna talked about when he was urging Arjuna to go into the battlefield, go onto the battlefield, and to kill his dear relatives. Arjuna didn't want to do this, you see, because he had hugged these sense tendencies, which are the relatives referred to his bosom for so long a time, and he didn't want to give them up. And so it is with all of us. These human habits that we have developed keep us bound in slavery. You cannot say at one and the same time, I am a Christian, I am a child of God, I am a spiritual being, and constantly find fault with everything in your life, with all of the people with whom you come in contact. Because God is there. And if you're going to have this universal consciousness, you must come to the point where you see him there, where you are aware that he is operating in this duality. But the Lord, the infinite beloved, my Lord, I see him everywhere. Every place I look, in every face, in every flower, in every tree, in every animal, in the fish that swim in the sea, and all of the insect life, and all of the minerals, because where is he not? This is true universal consciousness. Now, we've been talking about this a long time, and it doesn't come overnight. It doesn't come overnight. And you think you have it because you see the universal plan, how God works just constantly in rhythm, going out from himself, resting, then disintegrating or changing that which is, and bringing it back to himself. And yet the essence is never lost, never lost. But still, you will say, well, I can get God from this one, but this one alone. I don't want to go before that master because I am afraid. Why? Why are you afraid of going before one master and not another? Is God not equally present in each of them? And is your surrender complete? What is the evil that you see in such a one? Do you realize that you cannot possibly see anything in anyone else unless it first be in your own consciousness? So if a person is God realized and you cannot see this in them, is it the fault of the one who is God realized? Or is it your own lack and your own weakness which is still manifest within yourself? If you see something that someone else does to you which is wrong or which causes you to hate him, is that not what you are looking at? Or that which you are looking at, is that not what is in yourself? Now think on these things, because they are worth thinking about. Everything works together for good for them who love God. And you must learn to see Him. And as you project this consciousness of love, of universality, of divine service, of divine wisdom, these are the seeds which you will plant and which will return to you in kind. As you give forth love and compassion and sympathy and understanding to your fellow men, you will receive that from them. I plan on going on a trip, if it be God's will, and I will see probably quite a few who call themselves or who others call masters. I do not hesitate to go before one of them. This has not always been true. I had these fears too, so I know what I'm talking about. And I wondered what this one was going to do to me. Why? Because I'd had a terrific experience under a master in India. And I didn't realize at the time that the experience that came to me was a very necessary one. And for my highest good, and without it, I could not possibly have told you the truth which God has spoken through my lips. And there are others whom I have feared. And I think of one who says, I am God. But today at this state of consciousness, which may be a very short time later than when I objected to this, I think, is not this man saying exactly the same thing as the Christ did, knowing that he had Christ consciousness, I and my Father are one, therefore we are not different, are we? And I listen to the truth or read the truth that comes from this man, and I see no difference in what God has shown to me. He is the awakener, and he is awakening in love and drawing all to God within himself. But because he's appealing to the masses, he personalizes it. I opened a little diary that was sent to me the other night. The first thing, a diary came from this individual. Up at the top of the page it says, I can help you. On the next page it gave another great bit of wisdom. I turned over the page and there was my old bugbear. I am God. I am the Ancient One. Now, did my feeling that this man was committing a sin and saying, I am a God, make him any more, any less? And all of a sudden, I came to realize truly that here was a tremendous soul of God, that there was nothing there but God, that this man had gone through everything necessary to give him the pearl of great price. He had paid that price. And that the deficiency, if there be any, was still within myself. And just like that, I lost it. I am going before another one who deals a great deal in the astral sense, and I know this. But yet God is there very greatly, and that one has changed the lives of thousands and thousands of people. Is it not God himself who dwells in that one, operating at that level to serve those who are at that state of development, but yet always holding out the ultimate goal of God realization of oneness with the Father? I am going before another one who, with the mother of the ashram, sings chants to God. And this is a tremendous temptation to lose your body consciousness when you get into this state. I've had this difficulty myself, and perhaps some of you have also. You hear this beautiful, wonderful music, and especially when it comes in with special orchestrations like it did tonight, and you can almost hear the angels singing. And I want all of you to know that when Barbara stumbles this, that it is not because she is making a mistake in the ordinary sense, but because her mind is so focused upon God that she can't remember the words that she's supposed to sing. And sometimes the tears pour down her face in the ecstasy of God. So how can she sing in the ordinary sense? So when you hear this, don't be disturbed or think of it in that sense, because it isn't. More and more, God is absorbing her consciousness. Now this one mother has been given over 600 chants to God. And when she chants like this, she loses body consciousness and she goes into the state of trance which I speak of. But instead of feeling that she gets them from the one Father God, she feels that she gets them from the Mother Mira, who's a legend in India, a tremendous singer of chants. And she said in the book that I read about her life, that the Mother Mira came to her and said she would never leave her. Well, just as you have spirit possession in the lower sense of the unconscious spirit sometimes, and I do not say that this mother has spirit possession, it is not so in that sense, because I consider her one of the greatest souls that I have read about. I feel greatly attracted to her. Still, there is the use of this vehicle to express still the songs which and the chants which change the lives of many. But yet the guru teaches her always to focus her attention upon God. In all that she writes, her attention is upon the Father. Yet we have this one rather unusual thing to look at. Now, in each one of these things, you could say that there was work to be done. In one, you could say that the ego was still present. When you say, "I am God," even if you think it and don't say it because you are observing mona or silence, nevertheless, thought is action, because thought is vibration. And you are vibrating forth the fact that I am God. Now, to that degree, you can say that the individual is not completely God-realized. And this is a great truth that I am telling you. Because if I say that I am God-realized, then I take it that I am conscious of my existence, but yet I am still in duality, because I am vibrating forth, and duality is the only thing which contains vibration, because God the Absolute is beyond vibration, is beyond duality, he's beyond the power to describe. Do you see the difference? He is beyond the power to describe himself. In other words, he would be in complete and utter silence. To observe silence doesn't necessarily mean complete cessation of the activity of the mind. Now, it is only when you go beyond the mind through complete concentration upon God that the mind is completely stilled and you are in that state of ecstasy and bliss, which is the oneness with God. But when your mind is actually functioning focusing, even if it is the conscious cosmic mind of God, there is activity there, and so there is that difference between that and the absolute, and it is still in duality. Even when you say, I have experienced bliss. Bliss is an experience, something which can be felt. Is feeling God the absolute, or is feeling a part of duality? But still, it is the supreme goal held out to man. That is his aim, because it is said that God is ever new, ever existing, ever conscious bliss. But he is also beyond that, in the stillness of all things. And so when you go beyond all of the body activities, when you learn to become master of yourself, and still not only your mind, but all of your senses, until you are in a state of suspended animation, then you go beyond, and the mind is fixed or focused upon God in complete and utter silence, and then you are in that state of light and of bliss. It's a tremendous state. And few there are who can attain it. But it is the thing we aim for, because it takes us out of all of our human difficulties, out of the human consciousness which holds us in bondage and in slavery to all of these things of the senses, and it makes us divine. The average material scientist explores all of the wonders of nature, the laws of nature, in order to get the answers to his problems so that he may create great things for the betterment of humanity, sometimes for their destruction also. But the man of God, who is a scientist in the spiritual sense, explores the laws of the spirit in order that he might become the divine scientist, in order that he might know the divine laws of the universe and have jurisdiction over them. Now, we do not go in for phenomena. We do not go in for power. What we want is the experience of union with God, and that union is to become one with ourselves, because it is God who is this self that we speak of with a capital S, the divine intelligence within each and every one of us. We are always thinking of God as apart from ourselves, as God outside of ourselves. We never think that actually he is our very self, and that without him we could not move, nor breathe, nor live, nor have our being. We think of the high and the mighty things that we do. We think all the thoughts of hatred, of love, of joy, of sorrow. We think that we do these things, that we have these feelings, these emotions. And yet, what is the motivating intelligence and force which gives us this power? There are people who try to do good in the world, and they do not have their foundation in God. You will find that every president, and practically all of the kings that we know of in the Western world, sets the example, whether he be a God-man or not. But he sets the example of religious belief, because he knows that his people must have this to follow. Each president that we have attends a certain church, and he does this for the example to his people. Why? Because the people have faith and trust in God first, and secondly, in a man who practices all of the modes of behavior, of moral behavior, that we demand that he should, in order that he keep this trust which we have given him. If you want to set out to reform the world, you first have to reform yourself. You have to be the example of that which you preach and which you teach. And there is no other way. You cannot fight hatred with hatred. You cannot fight evil with evil. You have to be constructive in everything that you do. You can't tell everybody all the time, you're evil, you must change, this is wrong with you, something else is wrong with you, and expect to get cooperation from them. But if you will leave them just as they are and say, come, my children, love God in me as I love God in you. Let us all go to Him together. You have been born in this environment, in this nation, where perhaps people speak differently, they do things differently. For instance, in Tibet, they have the practice of polyandry, where a woman takes more than one husband. Here in America, we have the practice of Mormonism, or what do you call it?
Polygamy.
Polygamy, where a man has more than one wife. It's still being practiced. They made all the laws in the world, but still this is going on. They can't control it. The only way they can get at it is if they can find all of these people living together in one family. Now, these customs seem very evil when we look at it from the Christian point of view, from the Christian Bible. But if these people, for instance, were placed in this nation, this doesn't make them separate from God. They are still all of God's children. It is the life and the environment in which they were born, in which they have been trained, and their forefathers before them, they have never known anything else, and to them this is right. Should I go in and tell these people, you're committing a sin when you do this? How far do you think I would get? And this is the true of everything that we do with our fellow men. But rather, if you give them love and understanding, say, I realize this is your custom. This is what you are used to. And not say anything about that, but say, in order to attain God realization, we must be completely pure, physically, mentally, spiritually. Let us work toward these goals. Let us give love and service. Let us think only about God and talk about God. And gradually, all of the things that are wrong, we think, with everything that this other nation of people is doing, which is different than what we're doing, and which maybe they don't believe in, maybe all of this will disappear, and we will all be together in God, His bright and shining children, all filled with His love. Do you see what barriers, what misconceptions that we set up in our ignorance and our stupidity, really, sometimes? Because if these things have been taught and they are right to them in their religion, then who are we to say that it is wrong, any more than they could come and say to us, I do not believe in what you are doing, because this is not my religion, it is not my belief, it is not what I've been taught. Now, I believe in the teachings of the Christ with all of my heart and soul, and I try to live them in every way possible. But I also realize that not all of God's children in this world are Christians. They weren't all born in the same place, under the same conditions, with the same set of rules. And so if we're going to get this concept of universality, then we'd better broaden our concept, not in the sense of accepting evil, but in the sense of putting our full attention upon God and giving love to God, never mind the evil and the personality, their individuality, but giving love, understanding, and compassion to God in that one. Devotion to God everywhere, understanding of God everywhere, while doing right yourself at all times. And as you go through life, rising ever higher and higher in the Spirit, God will show you His truth so that you can put it forth to all peoples of the world on this universal basis, so that they can accept it no matter what their faith, no matter what their belief, their race, their color, their creed. It doesn't make any difference. They are all God's children, the separate cells of His body. And you cannot separate God from God. If he is everywhere equally present, there is nothing but God manifesting in whatever way you look at it. And make sure that this is true, because it is. But when we're down here, we're very aware of the difference between good and evil, and we have our own concept of it. And we don't always measure it by the Bible. Now you take this business of polygamy and polyandry, for instance, and you look at the moral situation in the Christian world today, and this applies not only to our own country, but it applies to many of the European countries today. We read about it in the paper. People are living together promiscuously without benefit of clergy. They go out and they satisfy all of their desires with many men, with many women. They don't even conform to the rules of these people who are in this environment and have been taught these things because they were born there, do they? So wherein are we so superior that we can sit down and judge our fellow men? So let us think first only of what our responsibility is to God in the way that we have been taught to follow all of the moral and the spiritual concepts of the Christ, but also to have a recognition of the fact that others perhaps are just as right in their own thinking under God as we think we are in ours, and that the only way that we're all going together in truth, in the universal way, so that we can live with peace on earth, goodwill toward all men, is to find it first within ourselves, and to express that, and to express positive thinking, positive action, to keep our minds, our tongues, our actions, and our bodies clean. We are constantly dwelling about that which is sordid. Father speaks constantly about all of the headlines in the paper that cater to people's desire to get the worst of everything. And how can we expect the world to get better unless we make a start? Does anybody ever stop to think how wonderful it would be if we would pick up a newspaper and see in a headline that somebody found God today? That somebody did an outstanding act to help his fellow man, in real headlines, I mean, you know, more than maybe once in a lifetime, the way it happens now. Just look what's being done to our minds. And we permit this to happen. We read it. We foster it within ourselves. We dwell on it. We talk about it to our neighbors. And we think about it, about ourselves. All of the bad things, not the good. And do you know why the world is the way it is? It's exactly because we are doing just that. Until we as individuals change our own consciousness, our own action, our own thoughts, and think positive thoughts and good thoughts and love thoughts and wise thoughts and give divine love and service to everybody. I don't care if it's the lowliest human being or the highest. If it's the lowliest animal or the highest. God is there. And you cannot say, I am a man of God or a woman of God, and deny that that is true and kick that one because that one is in that state of consciousness or in that form. God is everywhere. So we must serve him everywhere. And as you serve, you learn to love. And as you learn to love, you change. And as you change, your life changes. And as your life changes, you become a beacon and a light to change the lives of thousands. But it will never happen until you make the start first. Anything that has come to you, you have brought this condition upon yourself, whether it be good or bad. I don't care what it is. This is a fact, because you have the power of free will and the power of choice. And we are constantly choosing to dwell upon that which is not good, to gossip, and we do it, we think, innocently, to do this and that and the other thing, and always to criticize one against the other. But if we ever stop to look inside of that one and say, God is there, so good is there, love is there, and if I will first give that love, is it not possible that love who dwells within that one will respond to me? Because God is in the heart. He also sits on the throne of our consciousness, directing our every thought, our every word, our every move, if we will let him, but we take it away from him in the human sense. And we run with it. And he lets us until we bump ourselves so badly, until we suffer so much that we're willing to cry and go back to him. There are those who want new homes. They want new jobs. They want to go to a different place because they think everything is wrong around them, and I tell you that there is nothing wrong around them except that which is within themselves. And until that which is within themselves is changed, wherever they go, whatever situation, whatever town, whatever job, it makes no difference, whatever family, they will find that they have the same difficulty, and history will repeat itself over and over and over again. And they will finally die unfulfilled, probably hating the whole world and blaming the whole world for their condition because they wouldn't make the effort to change themselves and their own attitudes. Now, it's difficult because, as I say, we're creatures of habits, but it can be done if you work at it. And many of you here have proven this, as I have. We don't just go from here to here overnight. We've got to realize that even as we are human and make mistakes and want sympathy and love and understanding so that somebody can pick us up when we've fallen down as Jesus fell and his cross was picked up and carried for him, just so we must give this to other people if we expect it. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. So let us concentrate. It's most important to concentrate and to on only the good and to accept only the good and to put forth from ourselves only the good. Then you will change the things that are being concentrated on in the minds of all men everywhere. If we're constantly going to think about war, we're going to have war because mind is powerful. Whatever you think upon, so you are. Whatever you think upon, you give power to. If you don't want crime, don't talk about it and don't think about it. If you don't want evil, also don't talk about it and don't think about it. People can be changed. The most evil man in the world can be changed through love with God's help. It is he who will do it. God is the supreme guru, and he dwells in the heart of every man. It is he, the teacher, the spiritual teacher, the guru, in whatever form, that teaches all of us in every incident that happens in our lives, in every experience which comes to us. And instead of running away from something, why not face yourself here and now and look at it and say, with God's help, I can succeed. I can overcome this. And what a tremendous satisfaction and feeling of power and of glory and of overcoming that is when finally you have whipped whatever is necessary inside of yourself and changed yourself and the situation to the point where you are happy in it. Where you can live with people that before you hated and you couldn't get along with who were your enemies. That you can stay with the job where you are and conquer it and have a feeling of peace and companionship and love with those who work with you and a feeling of the fact that with God's help, I was able to conquer that thing which seemed impossible for me to do. What strength, what power you have gained. But if you run away from it, are you going to gain anything? Are you not demonstrating that you're a weakling, that you can't take it? That you're blaming everybody and everything else for something which lies right within your own power to change? And it's true. It's absolutely true. Make no mistake about it. So let us use this power for concentration for good and for God. Let us think constructive things. Let's stop reading all of the junk in the newspapers. Let us, as we meet each situation in our life, stand for God and for Christ and be a witness for him as we are directed within ourselves. He will guide and direct us if we will listen to that still small voice within. He will never mislead us. Test each spirit as it comes, and then act upon that. but act for His glory. And when you get the reward, take it not unto yourself, but realize that it belongs to Him, because He is the sole doer, always. And when you become the empty vessel through which His love and His wisdom and His power may flow, you have a communion with God such as you never dreamed of before. You are His child. You have no more responsibility, because He takes you by the hand and He leads you. He walks before you because He is also within you. He guides you from within, and He walks before you, lighting your way, making all things possible to you. If you will but have faith the size of a grain of mustard seed, these things will happen. Now think on these things, but just don't listen. Let us do them. Let us incorporate them as the sole foundation and bulwark of our entire existence, and the reward must surely come. But to the one who has sought, who has tried all things, and who has come to the point where they want nothing for themselves, when they have lost even the desire for God, but here I am, God, take me, whatever you want, it makes no difference, I am yours. Then for that one there's a special crown of glory. Special crown of glory. Because God's will is your will, and your will is God's will, and there is no difference. And then you can truly say, I am that. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I and my Father are one. And regardless of what country you live in, regardless of what language, what religion you follow, they are all saying the same thing. Truth is one. Sages call it by various names. And in truth, we are all that. This is the temple of the living God, the infinite Spirit, the ancient one, if you will, who dwells in all beings, in all things. He is in your temple, in my temple, and in every part of creation. Now let us pray to Him. Our Father which art in heaven,
our Father which art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name,
hallowed be thy name,
thy kingdom come,
thy kingdom come,
thy will be done,
thy will be done,
in earth as it is in heaven.
In earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread.
Give us this day our daily bread.
And forgive us our trespasses.
And forgive us our trespasses.
As we forgive those who have trespassed against us.
As we forgive those who have trespassed against us.
And lead us not into temptation.
And lead us not into temptation.
But deliver us from all evil.
But deliver us from all evil.
For thine is the kingdom.
For thine is the kingdom.
And the power.
And the power.
And the glory.
And the glory.
Forever.
Forever.
Amen.
Amen.
O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
May thy love shine forever.
May thy love shine forever.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
Upon the sanctuary of my devotion.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
May I be able to awaken thy love in all hearts.
And bring them to thee.
And bring them to thee.
Oh.